Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, September 17th. I'm Ray Graff. If you are looking to make some improvements around the house, we have a show for you. We welcome back licensed professional engineer and construction specialist Darren Tracy. He is ready to answer your questions. Darren has extensive experience in construction, renovation, plumbing, property management. He joins us to offer his expertise every so often, and it's a popular show. So call early, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We may even play another exciting edition of Name That Tool. You can also email your questions to voxpop@wamc.org, but call 800-348-2551 if you wish. Darren Tracy and your calls after the news. Good afternoon. Once again, it's Vox Pop on WAMC. It's our afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We welcome back Darren Tracy today to talk home maintenance, repair, and improvement with you. He is a licensed professional engineer with experience in construction, renovation, property management. He is a Building Performance Institute certified building analyst and a licensed master plumber. He runs the West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction Firm, and he is a director of the Capital District Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. You have a question for Darren today? Call 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. We have a stack of emails already. You can do that. voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org or 800-348-2551. Hello, Darren Tracy. How are you, buddy?
Hi, Ray. Any better? And I'd have to pinch myself.
Well, that's great. Well, don't do that on the show. So you just got a pair of brand new socks in the front office. What is that,
I'm
man?
I'm pretty excited. Yeah. It's.
Hold them up for me. These are brand, I mean, they are literally, I just saw them.
Yeah, and you said that I wouldn't wear these, but I will.
Really? Yeah. They're yellow Vox Pop socks, looks like gardening Vox Pop, or possibly the food show. It looks like gourds and such.
Pumpkins.
Yeah.
Yeah, gourds. And
so cool.
Very lively, and I'll wear these with pride.
You know
no
what?
Problem.
We are gearing up for the fun drive October 6th, and the lockbox is open right now. I don't know if those are up yet, but they're going to be a great premium, so you probably have the first pair that went out the door.
Okay.
I got to say, dude, what is that bottle, and why is it here? It's fragrant.
Okay, I brought in
we'll do Name That Tool in a minute.
Name That Tool.
That's not
also, I brought in a...
What is that, and
it's a
why?
A bottle of cologne or perfume that I found in a house rehab.
Really?
In the basement. It was a condemned house, and all the walls had fallen into the basement, so I hauled all the items out in a wheelbarrow, and I stumbled upon this.
So what is Aquarius?
It says Aquarius on it.
It's a black bottle, and it says Aquarius. It looks old. This looks like 60s vintage.
I would say 60s. And that's my zodiac sign, too.
Aquarius?
So,
oh, there you go.
So it has some significance. And I actually have it on today.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Well,
Before the show, I tried to get you to try it out.
I will not do that, sir.
No.
50% of the time, it works every time, right?
Yeah.
800-348-2551 if you have a question for Darren Tracy. You know, we were doing the lockbox. You're putting more
splash
on.
A little bit right, on
you
right
know, there's
now.
Not much yeah. ventilation in Studio A. I almost passed out during midday. And I, you know what? Don't do that. We have some emails here, but let's start out with, well, let's do a couple of emails. And then right before the break, we will do Name That Tool and give people a chance to weigh in. All right?
Okay.
This email came in yesterday, or no, very early today. My wife and I, and this is from Matt in Rosendale. My wife and I are interested in an expanded mobile home built out into a full-size house. A relation of ours is a New York certified mobile home seller and mechanic. He inspected the home and told us that the roof structure of the entire house was resting on the roof of the original mobile home, a pre-1975, pre-HUD standards model. His suggestion was to not purchase the home, which seems like sound advice. However, I was wondering if there is any cost-effective way to support the roof with a load-bearing structure that could be built into the house as it stands, or is that something that would be more trouble and expense than it's worth? The house is otherwise lovely, and the rest has already been largely renovated, and the price is within our budget. That's from Matt in Rosendale.
Okay. Yeah, so that's something that can be done. You would have to transfer the load down through the wall. You might have to increase the studs spacing and quantity in the walls, and then transfer that load down through to the earth through some pier foundations. Could be done.
Expensive?
Whether it's worth it or not, I'm not sure. Would have to take a look at it. Probably in the ballpark range, $10,000 to $15,000. You need to have an engineer certify it. You need some concrete footings and something like that. Maybe $20,000.
Okay. Yeah. Depending, you know, Rosendale might not be cheap, so it might be more than that. This one is from Mark, who says, I'm writing to get information about constructing an oversized one-car garage beside my home, and I'm unsure about resources needed for the project, such as an architect, engineering drawings, how to interface with the town, obtaining a trustworthy builder, etc. I first heard of you while listening to one of your interviews on WAMC and subsequently subscribed to your YouTube page and feel you are a trusted resource for building, engineering, and construction. I enjoyed your recent video about spray foam insulation as it displayed what felt like an honest view of that industry. While I don't think my garage project would require spray foam insulation, I really appreciate your willingness to honestly share such information as it adds to your credibility. I see. I would like to add, okay, so is this... Okay, I'm going to stop right there because it looks like he wants to hire you. So we're going to stop with that. And
can I cut in on that one?
Yeah.
That was sent to me by Mark this morning, and I forwarded it to you.
Yeah.
So that may be how I got in your email pile. And I already responded to
him. Oh, okay. All
right. And yes, you will need to hire a design professional, either a licensed architect or a licensed engineer, so they can prepare plans to submit to your local municipality.
Wow, people are loving Darren Tracy. Here's one from Anonymous in Niskayuna. I have 100 questions. Well, that's off the table, Anonymous. I have 100 questions regarding various issues in my house, from a wet basement to a hot attic to refinishing wood floors to a broken shower spigot. Lots more. What kind of person can I hire to go over all of these and get advice of what to do next? I'm not looking to hire someone to do the work, just someone who can help get the priorities straight. And that's always a big thing for a homeowner.
Sure, sure. You can hire somebody like me, but I'm not.
You're not doing business.
My plate is full right now.
You look tired in retirement.
I'm not retired.
Well,
I'm
half just, retired, right?
I'm half retired. Yeah. I'm half something.
Well.
Yeah.
Certainly certainly fragrant at this time.
Yeah.
Thanks, Aquarius. All right, let's play name that tool and then take a break and I'll gasp for air.
Okay.
What do you got?
Well,
this
you
is
tell me.
This is a disc.
Describe it without giving the
I don't know how to
giving it away by telling what the tool does.
So this feels like steel, I want to say.
So something made by steel, made of steel or from steel.
And it's a disc about 4 inches in diameter.
Close.
4.5?
Bingo.
Okay.
That's going to help a lot of people there because...
All right. Well, yeah. I'm sorry. And it has maybe a 3/4 inch hole in the middle. And it has weird little keyhole-like cuts around it. There are about 7 or 8 of these things. It has some rust. It's old. It's about a 1/4 inch thick, third of an inch thick. You heard it. It's heavy. You name that tool, and we'll take a break, Zach Malloy, and we'll find out if anybody has an answer. It's Darren Tracy today. It's excitement in radio. Anytime I can play Name That Tool and enjoy the scent of Aquarius, it's going to be a good show. All right, let's take a break. Well, you know the tune, Come Together. That's Mark Whitfield doing that. 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop Rigraff with you. Darren Tracy's our guest. It's Name That Tool. If you have a guest, if you have a guess on that, feel free to give us a call. Meantime, we'll just move on to the phones. Chris in Rensselaerville writes very quickly, I've noticed since I bought my house in 2018 that my water pressure has been decreasing. My house is on a well. I'm wondering if there's a way to increase the pressure on the pressure tank or if there is some kind of maintenance I can do to restore the pressure.
Yes. Chris is probably talking about a deep well where you submerge a pump at the bottom of it, and then it charges up and pressurizes a storage tank. Sometimes that storage tank gets waterlogged. So you can bleed that out and then recharge that to the factory set setting of PSI. Also, there's a pressure switch associated with that system, and two different setting switches are typically used. One's a 30-50, where the pump cuts on at 30 PSI and cuts out at 50 PSI. And there's another one that's typically used that's a 40-60. It cuts on at 40 PSI and cuts out at 60. So if you have a 30-50, you could change it out to a 40-60.
Now, this deep well, how deep does it have to be to be considered a deep well?
Yeah, I don't know exactly, but typically deep wells are like 6-inch diameter pipe casings drilled with a big machine versus dug wells that are hand dug out there with a pipe in there. And I think at my house, it's 280 feet deep.
That's pretty far down.
That's pretty far down. At our shop, it's 70 feet down. And I think we had tons of water at 40 feet, but for some reason he went deeper and we've got something like 100 gallons a minute.
Wow.
At our home, we're 260 feet down and we had less than 5 gallons a minute. So we had to hydrofracture that, a well driller coming in and pressurizing the casing and opening up the veins in the rock, the bedrock below, and we've got more water there. So that's a little bit of information about deep wells.
We'll get to the phones in just a moment. 800-348-2551. When you say energize the pump, is this done way down, right? Not energized. Did you say pressurize the pump?
They pressurize the well casing.
No. Going back to how a deep well works.
Yeah.
Are the pumps that are at the bottom of these deep wells, are they electric? Are they run hydraulically?
No.
How do they run?
That's a good question. They're electric, and they're cylindrical in nature, and they're called vertical turbine pumps. They have like little fan blades in them are capable of achieving high head pressure. And that's why they're able to pump water from very deep down. They're down there and they push it up, as opposed to a shallow well that your grandparents may have had back in the day where they dug a hole out back and lined it with rock, or any of these 1800 houses that we have throughout New England. You stick with those wells that might be 10, 15, 20 feet deep, you can stick a pipe in there like a straw with a check valve in the bottom, and then you have your pump inside your basement, and you turn your pump on, and it creates a vacuum, and it pumps the water, sucks the water up to the pump, and then charges a pressure tank. So two different types of pumps.
Interesting. Now, one more stupid question about deep wells and pumps that are 200-300 feet down.
Yeah.
You said they're electrically powered, right?
Right.
How do you run the power? On a secondary line on the side of the well or right into the well?
It's right in the well. So you lower the pump down, and it's attached to typically a plastic pipe, HDPE, high-density polyethylene, and the electric wire is just taped to that pipe. And so you lower it down by hand, and all the way down wherever you want to go. And then the pipe casing that's 6 inches diameter extends out of the ground a couple feet. You've probably seen those around residential. I know you live in a municipality where you have municipal water.
Yep.
That's a whole different situation. But these pipe casings stick a couple feet above the ground. There's a cap on them. Take that cap off, and you look down, and you can see the pipe going down. It's interesting setup, about 4 or 6 feet below grade. In this steel pipe casing is a hole that's drilled in the side with a special fitting called a pitless adapter. So that's a way to disconnect the piping from the wiring in system, and it just pull that right up, that the whole pump.
If there's any problem with the pump, you can
pull it
up.
Pull it right up.
Okay, Darren
right
Tracy.
Up. Now you can do it by hand. It gets really heavy. And well drillers have little derricks on their trucks to pull them out. So that's that's the skinny on that.
Let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Darren Tracy's our guest. We'll begin in New York City. James, you're on.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I live in a pre-war apartment in New York City, and I'm having trouble with my bathroom sink. It's been slow and or clogged up for a long time. I tried actually bypassing the trap and attaching a pipe directly to the drain, and the strange thing happens. When the pipe extends higher than where the drain is in the sink, the water flows almost freely. But then when you do it at the same level as the sink drain, it's clogged up.
Okay.
It's very strange.
Okay.
Wow. And I've tried all kinds of chemicals and stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. My best guess on that is that you're at a higher elevation, and that creates more head pressure, so that's able to overcome whatever restriction there is in the pipe. It sounds like there's a restriction in the pipe, whether it's built up tooth space or hair over the years at some point, or the pipe's corroding and bottlenecking because of the corrosion. So try to snake those pipes, I guess, would be the thing to do.
Yeah, I have a snake, but I'm not skilled enough. I wasn't able to get
it. Yeah, you got to be careful, too.
Where I wanted to.
You can break a pipe if it's old and corroded.
Yeah.
You said pre-war. Are you talking probably World War II or World War I?
1930s it was built.
Okay.
And I'm up on the 16th floor. I don't know if that
goodness.
Makes any difference.
What's your super say?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Why don't you talk to the
superintendent?
Does
everybody have a super?
Yeah, it's a rent-stabilized apartment.
Ah, I
so
see.
You don't want to bother them.
So good luck, yeah.
I try to keep people from going at work conditions.
Yeah, right, yeah.
All right,
well. Good luck with that.
Yeah,
just
appreciate it.
Try not to force anything.
Thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. It's Darren Tracy. Darren, no one's jumping in on the name that tool.
I'm surprised because you did a very good job of describing it. Maybe you need a... more information.
I don't know.
I'm not sure how much more you can garner.
I couldn't give any more information. So we'll give it another few minutes and then we'll call it.
We can give some.
Go ahead, man.
This is part of another tool. It goes with another tool.
Okay.
So and it's consumable.
A consumable tool.
It's a part that's consumable that goes on another tool.
Well, I would not eat that. It's metal. What do you mean it's consumable?
Consumable means that it's used up on the job
site.
Oh,
I see what you're saying.
That's,
so it
that's
wears
a construction
out
lingo term.
Okay.
Consumable.
So it's steel? Is that what it is?
Carbon steel.
Carbon steel, it's about what?
Well,
a quarter
actually,
inch?
There are other parts around the perimeter, but I don't want to say what
I don't
they
think...
are. If you can describe...
Yeah.
Maybe we'll leave it at that, and we can talk more about the exterior surface if nobody comes up with a guess.
I don't think anyone's going to do it. Let's go back to the phones. We'll go to Jill in Waterford. Hello, Jill.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Good. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Hello, Darren. You and I met on the tugboat a few weeks ago.
Oh.
Okay.
On the tugboat ride.
Cool.
Okay.
And I said,
I met a few Jills. Jingle my memory a little bit more.
Yep. Your Lisa talked me into joining the Rocking Voices.
Whoa, yeah.
Lindsay,
oh, sorry about that. Yeah.
Zach the engineer just about had a coronary. Cut it out.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Hi, Jill.
All right. Yeah. Well, now that we know each other, what do you want
to
know?
I call just to say hi, but I do have a question.
Okay.
Okay.
My kitchen sink. A couple of years ago, I wanted to put down new covering for it, and I noticed that some kind of soap had leaked all the way through to the actual sink floor.
Okay.
And it was a mess. So
right.
I didn't cover it back up. I just left it and to dry out, and it has. But when I got ready to put the covering back on it, I noticed that it was sagging in the middle.
Right.
And I'm sort of like the last caller. I have a wonderful landlord that I really don't want to bother with something if it's fixable myself.
Right. Okay. I can comment on that.
Is this something that I can fix myself, or does it even need fixing?
Sure. It's something that you can fix yourself, and I would suggest doing some maintenance so that it doesn't get wet in the future. And that's a common problem with kitchen sinks. It's very common to have a small leak through your drain. So,
just got to angle adjusting, that a little bit.
Adjusting the mic there.
Yeah.
What happens is you'll get some leaks, and it will wet that surface down there, and that surface is typically made of wood or particle board, and then when it gets wet...
I think it's particle board, but yeah. It wasn't leaking from the pipe. It was something that I had stored down there.
Okay. All right. So when it gets wet, it starts to deflect.
All right.
So what you can do is dry it out. You did a good job drying it out. What I've done in the past is apply contact paper to that surface so that if any water comes down in the future, it hits a contact paper. And in addition to the contact paper, I'll take a plastic tray or a cake pan metal tray and put it down there over the sag part. So okay. If you do happen to have a very slow drip, like one drip a day or 12 drips every 2 days, something like that, it picks that up and generally will evaporate out, so you never have that problem. And in lieu of the contact paper, since it's a curved surface, it may
not
stick
well. That's what I was going to put down there.
Yeah, you could paint that too with a latex paint.
Okay.
So those are some tricks. Okay. And if you don't like the undulation in it, you can put a tray across, a flat tray with maybe a lip that's a half inch tall on the tray to catch anything. So,
all right,
good
Jill.
Luck with that, and thank you very much for calling, Jill. And that was a great party on the tugboat, wasn't it? Ray, I didn't see it, the tugboat roundup.
You know, I told you we had stuff going on, but I loved it last year, and I will definitely try to do it next year. By the way, Winthrop writes in, don't try to fix something yourself in a New York City apartment. You won't have insurance. Even if you have apartment renter insurance, if your action inadvertently damages the building and or other apartments, you're in trouble.
Right, right.
Hire a licensed, bonded plumber. So there you go. That's probably good advice, right?
Right. Yeah.
All right, I think we have some guesses on Name That Tool. So okay. Let's go to John and Otis. John, you're on.
Hi. Well, I actually missed the initial description, but just based on your recent additions, I have a guess.
All right.
And that would be because recently I used a jackhammer for the first time, helping my brother break out a concrete footing for some fence posts we had to replace. And so that was my guess of an expendable part is the chisel on a jackhammer.
Hear the whole description.
To me, I didn't hear the initial description, so I was at a disadvantage to begin with.
All right, so but, we won't mock you
anyway. So
we appreciate the guess.
I will hold on and wait for the the right answer. But I have a deep well. I live here in the Berkshires. It's about 120 feet deep, and I know all about pulling the pump out by hand because my brother. In law helped me, and he got about 3/4 of the way done. He said, "Hey, John, you want some of this?" And I took over for him, and man, those pumps are heavy. Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah, it's a bit of effort to get it out. But I think my problem at that point was I had a failed check valve, and so every time we turned on the pump or whatever, every time the pump kicked on by itself, it would blow up like basically dirty water into the system. Another fun thing about the pump at that time, this is when I bought this place 25 years ago, was that they had inserted a heating wire inside the line to the pitless adapter to prevent it from freezing. And when the pipe drained out because the check valve failed, the wire actually melted through the PVC, whatever you called it, the pipe. And so we had to dig it all the way from the house to the well, which luckily was only about, I don't know, 30 feet, and replace that. So it was some fun. But my question is basically about sanitization. When I bought the place, I had the water tested, and it tested for some bacteria, not fecal, but just generalized brown bacteria, I assume. And so the during the purchase and sales agreement, the seller's well guy came over and just threw a lot of bleach down the well, and then obviously ran it out of hose for a while to clear it out. And I'm just wondering, is that a good maintenance practice to do? Because I have not done it since, and I sort of have mixed feelings about what it might do to the pump. And so that's basically
okay.
my question.
What do you think,
Darren? Is it a good idea? Yeah.
I think it is a good maintenance idea. How frequently, okay. I'm not sure. You could check with the New York State Department of Health website regarding rural wells, and they could give you some guidance.
Okay.
You could also check it every year, too. It's a water sample check.
Okay.
And, you know, if you didn't have any problems, then I probably wouldn't sanitize it because chlorine can be corrosive.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
all right.
So, okay. Well, John, so you don't have any tips on how to or what kind of concentration, because there's solid crystal form of bleach as well as pouring liquid, you know, out of a gallon. Any thoughts on that?
Well, what I've seen done is just take a gallon of Clorox and pour it into the well. But I would do that if I were to do that, I would have a garden hose right there and be diluting that Clorox, that chlorine, as it goes into the well. I'd probably even put it in a 5-gallon pail, half a Clorox bottle in a 5-gallon pail, fill the 5-gallon pail up and drop that down in so it's not so super concentrated on parts. So,
that makes a lot of sense. Yep. Thank you. Yeah.
You're welcome.
Well, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
John, thanks for the call. Let's quickly get a call in from Chris in Brantford, Connecticut, and then we'll take a break, and then I'll go through some of these email answers to name that tool.
Okay.
Let's go to Chris in Brantford. Chris, you're on.
Hi, guys. Thanks an awful lot.
You bet.
We're going to be remodeling a couple of bathrooms, and I've been seeing a lot of commercials about smart toilets.
Really?
And within my studies, I've determined that Kohler, the German one, is wicked expensive. Toto, the Japanese one, is wicked expensive. And the rest of them are probably Chinese. And I was wondering if you had any experience with these things and the quality thereof.
What's a smart toilet do, Darren?
I don't know. Other
really?
Than if it's a one flush or two flush, a toilet that has a button on it that... it's a small flush for number one, and it's a bigger flush for number two.
All right,
so.
That's ridiculous. Okay, well, what do you think, Chris?
Well, these are actually can be electric. They'll glow for you in the night, so you don't have to fumble around for them.
Oh,
they have built-in bidets and dryers and heated seats, all kinds of daffy stuff. But some of them are huge money, and then some of them are not. It's a one-piece. Oval shaped deal, and it's it doesn't have your typical tank, but they're tall, so they're easier to get off and on, you know.
Okay,
but yeah, no, but I'm just seeing a lot of commercials for them lately. That's
I've
all,
not seen
wondering.
One. I okay. watch a lot of TV. I've not seen anything on that.
Okay, well, the taller toilets are easier to get on or off, and. That's not limited. That characteristic is not limited to a smart toilet. And regarding
right.
features such as lighting and, but you know, that's definitely just a luxury type accessory that's going to add to the expense of a toilet. I was actually just thinking about a bidet today because of the show. It's one of my favorite videos that I mentioned.
Yeah.
I don't know why you're so down on that.
No,
my wife thinks
it's
like the greatest home improvement thing I
really?
Ever did for $100 is
okay.
add-on bidet.
I'll be darned.
So, and that's a YouTube. And can I segue into my YouTube?
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay. If we can get off this topic, enjoy.
Sure. I have a YouTube channel, and it shows you how to install an aftermarket bidet, which I would highly recommend.
But wait, that's not your video this time.
No. Segues into, I have another video that Ray kindly put up on the WAMC website.
For today's show.
For today's show about spray foaming an old house.
Oh, yeah.
And that, again, all these Venn diagram circles. I interviewed a gentleman at the Tugboat Roundup who has a little tugboat, but he also has a spray foam business. So he gave me the contractor inside on spray foam. It's a pretty good video for anybody that's interested in spray foam. It's a longer video.
You learned a lot.
I learned a lot. Yeah, and there's a lot there. And okay. Again, it's if you're not so interested in spray foam, don't spend the 15 minutes to watch it. But if you are interested okay. in spray foam or considering it,
yeah,
you can take a look at that. If you can't find it on the WAMC site, you can go to YouTube and search my name, Darren Tracy Engineer. And that will come okay. up with the bidet video.
Chris, are you interested at all in spray foam?
Not in the bidet.
All right, sir. Well, let's take a break. 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy's our guest. We will look at some of the emailed answers to name that tool, and then we'll go back to the phones. It's 800-348-2551. Little Stefan Grappelli with David Grisman. Enjoy some comfortably acoustic swing. Frenchman, he sure could play the fiddle, huh? 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy's here, and the Name That Tool segment of the show, thankfully, will come to an end in a moment here. Let's see if we have a winner. Cynthia writes in from Castleton-on-Hudson. Is it a saw blade? The round kind?
It's a type of saw blade, a special type of saw blade.
Okay. And someone writes, is it a blade of a skill saw? We had to get, oh, this is Gracie in Sheffield. We had to get a special one like that to cut formica.
No, it's not for a skill saw. No.
Okay. Carrie writes in, nail gun? I even know that's, no, okay. All right. Ease up on Carrie. She's very nice. Dan in Albany says, can't call in, but it sounds like a blade for a grinder.
Bingo. That's
really?
What it is.
Carl also said grinding wheel dresser, which is pretty much on, right?
Correct. And this particular wheel is made for grinding out a mortar joint in between two bricks. That's why it's the thickness that it is, a quarter inch thick, versus a typical grinding wheel for a grinder is less than that. And they're really skinny. They're used as cutoff, where you can cut a piece of pipe. It's a great tool
yeah.
for cutting steel. It's a little thicker. It's a grinder used for grinding steel for preparation for welding or other reasons. And another aspect of this, Ray, and I'll roll it over to you
okay,
on the edges,
ahead.
Is loaded with tiny little diamonds.
Oh, how
outside.
Much can I get for this at the pawn shop
you
around the corner?
I don't know about that, but no. you know that blade will set you back. Maybe $50, $60, $70. They're
okay.
not cheap. A good one.
And Greg also wrote in grinder blade for masonry or tile. So, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is great. We've had a lot of correct answers. That's wonderful. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Darren Aquarius Tracy is with us today. And let's go to
That's
Albany.
Good.
Megan, you're on.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I've got a couple of questions about the same project. And one of them does have to do with plumbing, so hopefully it's on topic. So what I was wondering is I'm helping do like a DIY renovation for my boyfriend's kitchen. And we are trying to do it on the cheap, but not too cheap. And right now, we want to replace the countertops with just like a Formica laminate kind of deal and do a drop-in sink. So my question about the sink piece and the countertop piece is I've heard of some folks having issues with like countertop installers and like making the wrong cuts and things like that for a sink. So with your experience, you know, would you recommend obviously having the sink and faucet purchased ahead of time, but how can we maybe help prevent like an accident or an error and like cutting happen?
Okay.
All right. Megan, what I would do is purchase the sink ahead of time, like you suggested, and then I would place that on top of your countertop upside down. And trace out the outside of the sink, center on your countertop, where you want it, front, back, left, and right. And then I would trace out the perimeter with a pencil. And then you remove the sink, and you have a line of the outer dimensions of the sink. Okay? So this sink that you would have, it has a flange on the outside that rests on top of the right. plastic laminate countertop, and you have a hole in the middle. So from that outside perimeter dimension, you want to back off, I think it's a half an inch on each side, mm-hmm. and most sinks will say that. So you want your hole about a half inch smaller in each dimension than the sink. And just drill a hole a half inch in from that line you made. In fact, I'd make draw another line, circumscribing line around inside of the one that you already made. I'm not describing this that great, but drill a hole in there, and then you take a saber saw and walk your way around the perimeter, and you cut your hole in your plastic laminate. So that's how that goes, and that sink has clips that clip to the plastic laminate sink, and then you'd want to caulk the overlap with a very thin bead of silicone, so water hanging around on top of the countertop doesn't get into the underside of the sink and work its way into the exposed edge of the plastic laminate countertop and swell it up and create a problem. So not sure if you followed me on all that.
I didn't. But
Ray didn't. Okay.
Megan, did you?
I did.
Okay.
Great. I did follow it. My kind of follow-up question, because I've never done this before, so I would not be installing the countertops. I think we're probably going to go through like Home Depot or something. With your experience, do they like cut that on site typically? So I maybe just have the sink on site when they come to install the countertops?
Depending on the scope of the work or the contractor you hire, they may just come and install the counter and then leave it to you to install the sink.
I see.
Could be a scope of work where they install the sink, and of course you'd have to have the parts there. So it depends on.
Okay, so probably a good question to ask.
Yeah, right. Very good. Right. Well, thank you.
Very good question to ask. And I do have a secondary
sure,
question
ahead.
With this piece, and it's more of a design question. So we're also going to be adding a kind of like an island off of the wall, so like sort of a peninsula to create a breakfast bar type thing. And when getting cabinets, I was thinking of just going with the pre-made kind of Hampton Bay line at Home Depot. That's just from the research I've done, they're the least expensive. But are there like, and maybe I need to talk to a designer at the location, like at Home Depot, but with your experience, Mike, are those fairly easy to install? And is there anything to be kind of aware of, or do you just kind of attach them to the walls and attach them to each other?
All right.
Easy to install. Take them out of the box, slide it in place, shim it as necessary, screw it to a wall, find a stud in the wall, and attach it to the wall.
Okay.
May need an electrical outlet depending on how long it is, depending upon code, and that can be done, but that's definitely within the wheelhouse of a home improvement DIY person.
All right, Megan, thanks for the call. This email from Joanne in Taconic, and this was a typo, but it says, subject heading for Vox Pox right now. That would be Medical Monday. This is not Vox Pox, it's Vox Pop, but I know it was a typo. Joanne says, I have a Samsung fridge and the red filter light is on. I can't loosen the filter. The pressure's too tight. I don't know how to disconnect the water. Any thoughts?
You could turn off the main valve in your coming into your home and then relieve the pressure by opening up the sink faucet. Any sink faucet, that should depressurize all the water lines in your system.
All right. This email from Timothy. There are all kinds of products on the market to control mildew and mold in the bathroom. What about down below? What's the best way to get rid of black mold that is already present in the basement? Can this be done by the ordinary person, or does black mold require a professional? The house is approximately 150 years old, semi-finished basement. And that's from Timothy.
Oh, you know, I even hesitate to take that one on because of the word black mold.
That's,
I think there's a lot of molds that are dark colored that are not like the killer type of black mold.
Right.
But you can go to a home improvement store and buy a mildicide product and spray and wipe down. And the key is to keep the moisture away. Whatever caused that mold in the first place, it, you know, needs a food source. It needs an appropriate amount of moisture. And it needs a certain temperature range. So if you can keep the moisture away, then it won't grow back after you take care of it.
Let's go to Ted in Shelburne, Vermont. Hello, Ted. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I thank you very much. And I know I need your other connection to get into the lockbox. I'll be doing that.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
I have a cape built in the 60s, I guess. And this is partly getting professional advice because I already seated the pants on it, kind of. And I added insulation to the top of the roof. And this was actually repurposed, so I wasn't buying new materials. But I wondered if you have done a video or have an application of just putting vertical 2x4s every 4 feet, above the existing structure, and putting down insulation and then shimming, and then I used metal roofing. But it saved me so much energy, especially in summer, because there's so many BTUs coming into this house, and there's so much advertising for putting roofs on. The season's kind of over, but we didn't have to open up the roof. I didn't have to buy new plywood, because I know some of it's not great. And, go ahead to another caller if you want.
No, go ahead.
Could give us some advice on whether, because when I mentioned that to the people considered smartest guys in the room, they say, well, if it was smart, we'd be talking about it ourselves or something. But it saved so much. It made the house so much more usable without huge amounts of air conditioning in the summertime up there on the top of a cape. And because you can't insulate easily because your sheetrock is right close to the roofing.
Yeah.
Have you thought of the concept or done anything with that? Or if you would consider it, I think it would save a lot of people a lot of effort.
Okay.
And money.
Okay, here we go. Yes, I would consider that. And you mentioned a cape style. Those are notoriously hard to insulate because of the nooks and crannies, and they typically have small cathedral spaces up at the top. So insulating on the house and the exterior side of your roof sheathing is a great idea. As a general rule, the best place to insulate on a building is as far in a northern climate is as far out as possible.
Huh.
And if you think about commercial buildings, flat roofs, new construction, they all have their insulation on the top of the roof, not on the interior where
right.
you can see, but on the top. So it's a great idea. If you get any cooling, condensing, that happens further out into the plane of the insulation, and it doesn't have a space, depending on the type of insulation you use, it doesn't have a space to condense, so that's not an issue. What can be an issue are areas around the intersection of the walls and the roof. You have to treat that with care. And you are losing a little bit of R value with your sleepers, your 2x4 sleepers there. But all in all, it's a really good idea for insulating a home.
Ted, thanks a lot for the call. You know, we talked a little earlier about the video on spray insulation. And Jose wrote in just a little while ago, is it okay to insulate with spray foam the ceiling of an unfinished basement? The ceiling of an unfinished basement.
Yeah, the short answer is no, and the reason for that is because I think you can get into condensation problems, whether it's open-cell spray foam or closed-cell spray foam, and I get into a discussion of the difference between open-cell and spray foam and closed-cell in that video. It's a good video. You should check it out. What you should do in a basement is to insulate the exterior walls and not insulate the floor.
Yeah, so fascinating.
Right. Exterior wall, a rim joist perimeter, rim joist being the area just above the foundation that starts your wood framing. That's a leaky area. Insulate that. And then the walls down to at least 4 feet below the top of the foundation wall. 4 or 6 feet is the code. Can go all the way to the floor.
Darren Tracy is our guest today. A few moments left. 800-348-2551 is the number. voxpop@wamc.org is the email. And Sally wrote in, I'm doing a lot of my own home renovations, and I've made it to the floors. After pulling off lots of unattractive and damaged tiles and junk, I've gotten to the original hardwood tongue and groove flooring. It needs to be sanded. I have no idea what is on the floor. What do you recommend for personal protection while sanding, and what type of floor sander do you recommend?
Well, you'd want a HEPA dust mask at a bare minimum. You would want a fan at a window blowing air out and a door open, moving air. That's always one of the most important things, is to keep air moving, keep the dust particles out. It's not really a homeowner type thing to,
really?
To sand your floor. I've done it and I messed them up. You know, when I first started my construction business, I rented a drum sander and I messed up.
How can you mess it up?
Those things can be aggressive and dig into
go
a
too
floor
far
too much. Yeah, especially with a coarse sandpaper. So I bought some floors for customers.
Oh, that must have cut into the bottom line.
Yeah. That, you know, when you hire a contractor, one of the things that you have to take into consideration is like they don't make money on every job. So if you think a project is like, oh, that's a lot of, well, you know what, they do their best to give you a fair price, but they have to charge enough to pay for mistakes, either their own mistakes if it's a small contractor like our construction company was when I first started out, or if they have a bunch of employees, nobody's perfect and you have mistakes, they're going to happen, and you know somebody's got to pay for that. So that's one of the reasons that prices are up. But you could try it with a drum sander.
But you're not recommending this.
I wouldn't recommend that. No, I would not recommend that. You not only rent a drum sander, you rent what's called an edger. It's another type of sander with a rotary wheel. You go around the perimeter because the drum sander can't get real close. Don't do it unless you're a very adventurous person and are ready for some mistakes on the floor.
How many days work is it for maybe a 900 square foot or 800 square foot ground floor of a house?
Well, it's
how many days?
It depends on the coating that you use. You can sand that out in a day.
Yeah.
Okay. Coarse, light, get it sanded out in a day. Next day, I would highly recommend using an oil-based varnish because it's more durable than a water-based varnish, but it takes like a day to dry.
Yeah.
So you got like a full day of that, and I'd want to put three coats on.
So that's
at least two or three.
Several days work.
Three is what I would suggest. So there's 3 days plus the prep day, so that's 4 days. If you use the water-based varnish, which are okay, it's just not as durable, 1 day prep, next day the varnish, you might even get two coats on the second day.
Darren Tracy, we're out of time. I have the link to your YouTube page and today's video on spray foam on our page for today's Vox Pop. But if someone is out there and wants to search you up on YouTube, you have so many great videos. How do they do it?
Darren Tracy YouTube. You can just search that. And also, did you put the link up for the free home energy audit from NYSERDA?
Maybe.
Anyway,
we're
just
doing
say,
the lockbox. It's possible I did. It's possible I didn't. I cannot remember.
Let me just suggest that anybody in our listening area in New York, go to NYSERDA and get a free energy audit if you haven't had that done. I know you have a lot of listeners from other states. I know Mass has an equivalent organization. Get an energy audit. Make your home more energy efficient.
All right, man. Great. We'll see you next time. Support comes from Berkshire Taconic Community Foundation. From scholarships to grants to personal giving plans, Berkshire Taconic Community Foundation, connecting local generosity to help create local opportunity. Learn more at berkshiretaconic.org. And the Apple Barn and Country Bake Shop, Bennington, announcing their pickle-themed harvest festival Saturday, September 20th, with a sunflower maze, live music, barbecue, and more. Facebook and theapplebarn.com. Well, once again, thanks to Darren Tracy for being here. Thanks for the calls and the emails and the guesses on the Name That Tool. He'll be back again soon. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer, screener Andrea Leon. I'm Ray Graff. The Gardeners are back tomorrow. We'll see you, too.